Hello and welcome to Millennial 2018 again. This is an impromptu hangout arranged because Asha Logos couldn't manage it, and it is with Mike Enoch of TDS.
Yes.
Welcome, Mike, to Millennial.
Thanks for having me, and a Merry Christmas to everybody out there on the internet in the US and Europe.
So I want to compliment you on your winter sweater. Or a cardigan. Yes. I'm not sure what it is. A cardigan.
It's actually the zipper only goes down to here. This was actually bought in Bergen, Norway, on a trip I took there in 2004. So this is official Norwegian Christmas gear here. What is it? The Norsk? I forget the name of the brand that does these. I can't read that. But yeah, it's official from Norway sweater. So yeah.
Right. Okay. So I was just looking at the live chat to see how excited they were to see your who the surprise guest is, because that's all I said was a surprise guest.
Oh, awesome! Yeah.
Yeah, I think they're quite happy because you know I did say that you and I should do like I wanted you to appear on my channel like 2 years ago, but I think at one point because I did appear on your podcast at one point, and at one point during that. You and I had a brief exchange about trolling techniques, and I said to you, you should come on my channel and we can do a specific hangout about that, but it never happened, so it's a bit of a shame. And yeah, I've always thought it'd be nice to have you on as a guest. And
of course, you know, yeah, no, I'm happy to be here, and we should definitely try to work closer together. Of course, there's so much going on, things are so busy. I actually was very impressed with the lineup of Millennial this year, because I was amazed at how many people are out there doing things. I haven't watched every single one. I've watched some of them, but just seeing the schedule that you had laid out, I was like, wow, I had no idea there was this many people out there doing things. Very exciting.
Mm. Yeah, it is. I think this happens. A lot of people are surprised. I mean, it's not like I know all of these people. It's just that all of these guests, but they apply. This year, I think I had about 115 people apply to do this, and I disqualified quite a number for various reasons, and then about another 10 or 15 didn't follow up on picking a slot, but and the rest are basically on, or there were scheduling conflicts with maybe another 10, so it's up to about, I think it's going to be about 72 guests in total, so 72 hangouts, so not yes. Bad. It's not bad. It's the biggest one so far, and I'm not sure if I'll do this next year, because I don't know. It is difficult. It is quite challenging. But
I mean, it's got to be a lot of work. Right? How many are you doing a day? Like six or eight?
Five. Every day for 2 weeks. But you know, once you get into a certain rhythm, it's just a matter of finding out what works, what you can put up with. So, yeah, there we are. But enough of that, because no one wants to hear me moaning about the trials and tribulations of Millennial. They want to hear you talking about stuff. And we did agree that we would talk about... Let's start with the censorship thing, because I think it makes sense to start with that and then segue into the other topic, which is simply Trump.
Yeah.
I think that's a good one. Censorship. You have faced a lot of that, so take it away.
Yeah, I mean, I've faced a lot of censorship. We've lost various services. I don't want to go into everything that's happened or any techniques we've used to circumvent this specifically, but we've faced our fair share. I mean, I have faced, I've had many accounts shut down and things like that. And this kind of has happened to us before it happened in a big way to kind of like the alt-light, if that's a word everyone kind of knows that we mean by that. So I guess we were facing it in 2017, whereas for us, 2018 has been a relatively, we figured out how we can operate. Whereas the alt-light was still assuming, hey, we can use all these platforms. And now they found out that that's not true. I've also found that people are kind of adjusting their presentation, because when we started Tedious, it's coming up on five year anniversary of that, which will be August of 2019 will be the 5 year anniversary of the show.
And that's interesting. It's good. Just let me say that January, like in about 2 weeks from now, is going to be the 5 year anniversary of this channel.
Yeah. And it will be the 7 year anniversary of the website. And the 5-year anniversary of the blog will be in August of this year. But the website has been around for 7 years now, a little bit more than 7 years. So, but we were full bore, whatever we wanted to say, just going crazy with everything we wanted to do. And we didn't face anything for like a couple years. We really didn't start getting shut down until 2015 and then 2016. And we were saying all kinds of things I won't say here.
Wasn't that during your libertarian phase, or did that piece
sort of. I mean, the libertarian phase was already, in terms of being a doctrinaire libertarian, was already over with 7 years ago by the time we even started the site. We were more libertarian, I would say, leaning when we started the show. But the saying whatever we wanted was because we thought we had free speech. And I think this is something that Americans, perhaps Europeans, have been dealing with this for a while, where you have to be more careful, have always had to be a little bit more careful in how you present, where Americans, because we have free speech, and this goes all the way back even decades, I would say, have been a little bit more aggressive, shall we say, in how they presented themselves with these kind of politics. And it sort of led to, I think, the Europeans actually, and we're seeing, I think, much better progress on these kind of politics in Europe now. And I think part of that is that you get strengthened, repression actually strengthens you. But I do think that what we're going to come out of in America after this wave of censorship and repression is we're going to be a harder and a smarter group of people. And it's going to be actually more difficult for them to deal with us. And people are having to devise all kinds of novel strategies to deal with both censorship, to deal with legal attacks, to deal with all of this stuff. And I don't want to give any details.
Yeah, but how can anyone demonize you when you're wearing a nice Christmas sweater like that, you know?
No, I'm a nice guy. I'm a really friendly person. People think I'm like this mean, you know, crazy guy, but it's not true. I'm a very, very friendly, warm person. Trust me.
People like me.
That's like the old Donald Trump thing. People love me. But also, you know, everyone's going to have haters. It just comes with the territory. Once you get a certain amount of viewers and any kind of medium, haters come with the territory. So just don't let it bother you.
But yeah, I think you're right that in Europe we have had to be more polite. But it's not even a matter of had to be more polite. I think it's just sort of natural. I think in America, the existence of the First Amendment tempts people to say things that they wouldn't otherwise say. It's like because you've got this freedom, you use it even though it's actually deleterious to you to use that freedom.
It's almost bait. The thing is that there's another thing, though, that it's sort of like Americans have this sort of theoretical dedication to the idea of free speech that maybe other societies don't have. Although you'll find that people become they're willing to check their principles depending on who it is that's speaking. And this also has to do a lot with the new entrants to America, shall we say, who have absolutely no dedication to concepts like free speech. And I think the idea of free speech has become twisted over the years. So things like corporations are allowed free speech rights, and people are allowed to use free speech to defend things like obscenity, pornography, gore, graphic violence, etc., while political opinions get shut down because of the rights of a private company. Meanwhile, those private companies that have established near monopolies using public resources are allowed to shut you down because they have their First Amendment right to shut you down. And it seems to me that any company that is using public infrastructure like the internet, which is developed by the United States Defense Department, as using public telephone lines, which were required by the U.S. Telecommunications Act to wire up every home in the United States. And that massive amount of infrastructure, which is paid for by the public, they piggybacked off that to create their near monopoly services. And I feel like they don't have a right, given that, to violate our First Amendment rights. As long as speech isn't criminal, people should be allowed to say it. Now, whether or not what you say is wise politically, that's another thing. But I think in America, at least, we do have a very solid argument. I believe that the FCC or the FTC should start getting involved in telling these companies you have to allow free speech, and then they should be also investigating monopolistic practices by some of these payment processors. Like,
look what's just happened with Subscribestar.
Exactly.
PayPal have sabotaged a rival to Patreon because they obviously want everyone to be on there and only there. And if you can't get on there, then they want you to be fucked.
Yes, and it's monetary somewhat, but I think more than monetary, it is political. These people have a point of view.
Absolutely. And, I mean, they're not doing this to make a profit.
Right. I think that there is an argument that essentially all of these companies are colluding with each other. They're conspiring with each other. They're meeting together. They're engaged in anti-competitive practices, but they're doing it for the purpose of a point of view censorship rather than money. So they will lose money. Patreon is losing money. They're losing subscribers. And there's other creators on Patreon that are maybe more milquetoast or more mainstream or don't violate the political principles of the people that work at Patreon that are like, hey, I'm now losing money because you guys censored. Sargon was the one that kicked it off. You guys censored Sargon, and now I've lost 100 subscribers. So what the hell?
Yeah, I think Styx, Hex, and Hammer has lost $1,100 a month because of this already. He's still on there, but lots of his patrons have left.
Well, he should consider. I'm not going to tell him what to do, but if him leaving, that would be a significant blow. I mean, Sam Harris left, to his credit. Although I think Sam Harris could possibly be also leaving because he's going to get in on the ground floor with whatever Dave Rubin and Jordan Peterson are doing. And I will sort of tentatively support that effort, but I will say to them, if you guys build a platform and you censor anybody engaged in legal speech, as long as it's legal, not people threatening violence, not people threatening harm, not people inciting violence, people making... Even if they talk about race and ethnicity and things like that, even if they talk about these subjects, you can't censor them. If you do, your entire project is suspect.
I agree. And to be honest, I don't think...
That's a challenge. I'm putting down the gauntlet for them. It's up to them to surprise me positively.
Yeah. I think it will be for the likes of Dave Rubin, Jordan Peterson, and Sargon of Akkad. I think it will be a payment processor for them, and it will be allowed to survive. But you know, the payment processors will allow that. It'll be a funding platform for them. And the payment processors will allow it to survive so as to create this illusion that, oh, what a triumph for freedom of speech.
Yes. And the danger there will be that it will be another controlled opposition release valve. And they'll put up this big stink, and then they'll get it, but they'll still be censoring opinions to their right. And so by that way, they'll have this big funnel, this big pressure release. Oh, look, we won. We got freedom of speech. And then they will still have taboo topics, which are, of course, the most important topics, which are issues of things like, you know, identity.
Yes.
And those will still be censored. It will be a big time classical liberal, you know, identity doesn't matter, only principles matter, circle jerk, which is like, okay.
Yeah. You know, it's just like liberals from 10 years ago, basically.
Yeah. And like the postmodernists, you know, people that, you know, no more radical ideologues on our channel. You know, like that's, you know, that'll be that, or, you know, or the whole, anyone that talks about identity is inherently leftist and blah, 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 blah. Like all the stuff they talk about. So that is a worrying concept. But I also think that possibly there could be pressure applied to them. The same way that, you know, we might not be able to pressure banks and PayPal and Patreon and things like that. But we can pressure those guys because there's a significant crossover with our audience and theirs. And so I think we can put pressure on people like that.
And they have made the sort of ideological commitment to freedom of speech, whereas Patreon and PayPal and so on haven't.
Right.
So, they've sort of put themselves into that position. I mean, you know, who knows? Maybe Jordan Peterson and all that will have a complete freedom. But, even assuming that they wanted to do that, how are they going to be allowed to do it? That's what I'm... And it's the same with Gab, you know, the thing that where they want to I don't know if it's now been sort of said that it's going to be crypto based, but if it's not, if it's fiat currency, I don't know how they're going to do this, because they're surely subject to the same restrictions as every other company. So I don't know how, because Gab have said that they're going to have their own funding system built into the website. I don't know. I'm skeptical, but we'll just have to wait and see how this develops.
Yeah, I think that one thing that always happens is you ultimately run up against the banks. And there's no real way, and that is at that point, then you realize what the system really is and who's really controlling it, because that, like, you can go and go with the system and you can make inroads and you can push back and you can push back, but eventually you come up against the brick wall, and ultimately what that brick wall is the banks. It's money. It is the source of money and the ability to participate in the economy. And that is the greatest power that they have. And we don't really have any known way other than through the government to make them do what we want. I mean, at least right now, there's no known way. And so that would, it would be wonderful if we could get some FCC action or some FTC, you know, Federal Trade Commission action in on this in order to, but again, I would wonder if these would be halfway measures or whatever. But the other thing, we also just have to be smart. We also have to be smart. There's always mailboxes. There's always cash. There's always money orders. There's always checks. You know, this thing, there's always ways that you can operate. And ultimately, we're going to have to be, you know, we're just going to have to be very smart.
We are. And it might, and that's the thing. I've got a PO box set up on my website. You can go to millennialwolves.com/donate. And there is a PO box set up. And because I'm thinking it's the only thing they can't deplatform us from is the post office.
Yeah, I mean,
it's going to come to
I'll tell you one thing though. In the 1930s, Father Coughlin was one of the most popular broadcasters in the United States. He's a Catholic, and he was known for his criticisms of, shall we say, the globalists. And he had millions of viewers nationwide. Catholic priest. Did a radio show. He actually had a newspaper that was seemingly ironically today titled Social Justice. And he was a fascist. He was a fascist. Okay. He was straight up. He supported Mussolini. He supported Hitler. These were his views, but he had millions upon millions of listeners in the US. He supported the working class and these were his politics, and he had tens of millions of listeners, and he sent his newspaper through the postal service. And they shut it down. I don't know how they did it. I'd have to go back and look, but they shut down the delivery of his newspaper. Which is insane. Because today it feels like they wouldn't be able to do that. Like, you would be able to get a First Amendment protection for the use of the Postal Service. But somehow they did it. A legal mind would have to look into this and do it, but they did do that.
Maybe it was counted as subversion, like McCarthy 20 years later.
It's possible that they used something along the lines of you're supporting a foreign government or something like that, yeah.
It is surprising, though. I mean, I guess in our case, they'd have to justify that for each of us, that we are, you know, subverting the nation and supporting a foreign government.
They say that. That's why this Russia stuff is about, right? That's what they're trying to build. But no one really believes it except for, I mean, nobody. The Russia thing is remarkable because nobody believes it. It might seem like they do when you go online and you see what the blue checkmark people and the Beltway insiders and the liberals, but only probably a few million people believe that or even care. Outside of urban centers and outside of these bubbles that this media class and the bureaucrat class and the government class and the sort of the upper middle management of corporations and things like that, outside of that, people don't believe it. And even a lot of them don't believe it, but they know they're supposed to pretend like it's true.
Yeah. I mean, it's easy to forget that this actually does go back more than 2 years, because it was Hillary's speech in Reno in August 2016 where this thing was just pulled out of nowhere. Far as I can recall, there was nothing, no precursor to this. She just suddenly announced that the KKK, the alt-right, Alex Jones, and Putin were all in cahoots. It was all basically one monstrous hydra.
Yeah, it's really remarkable, and it's I've and it's so absurd because like I've been accused of that. Oh my gosh, I got to sneeze. Hold on. Okay, it's fading. Thank you. Like we were accused. Like I had never even crossed my mind to think of this. And yeah, then they came out and they've been pushing it for 2 years. And I believe the Nate Silver, actually, globalist that he is, did a survey of this, and he said that it was less than it's like of all the factors, he had a way of ranking factors that influenced the election. He said Russian interference was below 100. So there was at least 100 more important factors in influencing the elections than Russia, whatever it is they did, right? But it's all they talk about. And now there's this thing they found out that they had this Democratic strategists did psyops on the Republican election with Roy Moore and what's the guy's name? Jones, that beat him, the Democrat that beat him down in Alabama. And it's like they've now revealed in the New York Times that there was a Democrat strategist group that was doing things like, and they were, and the funny thing is when they revealed it in the New York Times, they still managed to blame Russia. So here you have Democrat consultants that are caught going and doing these sort of shady tactics, so-called, by creating fake social media accounts, pretending to be Republicans, supporting like random weird candidates, using divisive rhetoric, trying to split up, like going into Republican Facebook groups, trying to cause infighting and such. They were doing all of this. And the New York Times uncovers this, and I guess rather than covering it up, they say, well, they were just trying to further understand how Russia did their dirty deeds in 2016.
Right, so it was like an investigation.
So it's like a psyop on top of a psyop. Yeah.
That's so desperate.
It's like Inception level. I'm like, are you kidding? I'm like, how many levels are you on? Like, this is, and then the New York Times is reporting it as if, and they're like, don't worry though, it didn't have any effect on the election.
This is like the thing where a famous celebrity will be caught looking at child porn, and he'll say, oh, "I was just doing it for research purposes." Pete Townsend. It's as ridiculous as that.
I was trying to fight against this stuff.
Yeah.
A crusader against it.
Very strange. But of course, they do say. I mean, you know, we know the mainstream media say things that are blatantly, I mean, are just obviously false. And then run with it. Presumably, because, you know, the whole thing about repeating a lie often enough, and it becomes, I don't even know how accurate that is, but they're definitely going on that logic.
Well, I mean, it's funny because that's a quote attributed to Hitler. And I believe he did say it, but it's often.
But he was talking about the.
Yes, the he was analyzing the phenomena. He wasn't like recommending it as a policy, which is sort of funny. However, the Goebbels, the propaganda minister, did say that he believed that best propaganda was repetition and sloganeering and things like that, rather than, you know, there's a lot of in-depth analysis, but ultimately to sway the masses, you need to repeat. And that's not like necessarily repeat lies, but oftentimes I think people are frustrated because they, you know, you talk about NPCs and people always giving you the same things back. Well, you got to remember, like most people aren't deep thinkers, right? So they kind of need this kind of way for them to understand things. As long as you're not lying to them, I think it's fine. As long as you're not telling them to repeat lies. But then NPCs, these people, they repeat just like blatant lies. And they're accustomed to treat disagreement as if it's something underhanded, if traitorous, treason, Russian bots, right? So the whole Russian bot thing was pretty funny. I mean, you know, and we've all been called a Russian bot, I'm sure.
Yes. Yeah. It just seems so silly, so desperate on their part. I mean, it makes me feel sorry for them. You know, it's like somebody who's not used to analyzing and thinking on their own is suddenly being pressured to do so. But they've been given this tool that they can use as a sort of get out clause, which is just to call the other person a Russian bot.
Yeah, I think social media generally has revealed a lot of things about the cognitive capacity and critical thinking capacity of masses of people. It's fairly interesting. I mean, it would be fascinating if we could get any kind of honest investigation into this. But of course, we know the social sciences are generally ruled by dishonest people who don't want the truth getting out and who use their positions to actively cover it up. But all kinds of things are revealed by social media activity, including the general, I'd say the general critical thinking and cognitive capacity of sort of the mean person in society, which can be a bit depressing because then you realize we've attracted all these people to our views, but then all the people we've attracted are of above average intelligence, but also above average combativeness and contentiousness. So then we have this tendency that we'll battle with ourselves because everyone has a big personality, everyone has a big brain, and everyone has really strong opinions, and everyone's ready to fight. So it's like I am now, my thing, my New Year's resolution, what I want everyone to think about is like, doesn't matter if you think this guy is a weak gnat or am gnat or not sufficiently this or that or the other. Point all that negative energy at the enemy. You know, well, all that anger, I mean, pointed at our enemies.
I say this kind of thing all the time.
Yeah.
We have enough enemies on the outside who, and they are literally trying to destroy us and ruin our lives. Yeah. And so, you know, if you're ever looking for something to attack or undermine or troll or whatever, you really are, you're abundantly spoiled for choice on the outside. So for God's sake, don't look, you know, within our own movement for this. It's a weird thing. It's I don't know if there is some kind of psychological explanation for why people do this. The narcissism of small differences, cabin fever, perhaps. I don't know. Or the sort of resentment that not enough is being done. That, I think that is a cause of frustration. That sense that it's not moving as fast as we should. But either way, whatever the reason for it is, it would be this anger and frustration would be better directed outwards. Because God knows they're directing their anger and frustration at us. Yeah. And regardless of our differences, you know, the enemy doesn't care.
They don't care about them. And there's a misconception I think a lot of people have, which is sort of like, oh, well, I'm of this particular kind of, shall we say, right winger or far rightist or whatever you want to say. I don't want to marginalize ourselves like that, but you know what I mean? I'm like this of this type. I'm an American nationalist. All right. But you really, you know, we know what that means. Right. And there's another person who's a little bit more on the radical side, right? It's like, look, one misconception a lot of people have is like, if we just get these guys out of the way, then the general public will listen to us. Like, if we get the guys that are doing the thing that we want to do, but just doing it in a different way than I want to do it, you know, Wignat, Amnat, whatever you want to call it, if we get this e-celeb out of the way, we get the big guy out of the way, if we get those guys that do that dumb thing out of the way, then people will listen. Well, the thing, they're never going to get, you're never getting them out of the way because you're not going to go and commit murder. So you have no physical way to keep these people off the internet saying what they want to say. So the only thing you can do is just deal with the fact there's going to be somebody that you're going to disagree with over issues that's going to maybe behave in ways you don't like and maybe make you cringe. And make you facepalm and just keep pushing forward and going towards the actual people that are trying to shut everybody down. The left has unbelievably cringy people. Yeah, they have people that are absolutely wretched and awful. They have people that chop off their own private parts and have blue hair and act completely ridiculous in public. And you will not see a single person disavowing or attacking those people. Now, privately, I'm sure that it's a mess, right? But publicly, you just don't see it. It's very rare. And if it does happen occasionally, you see sometimes leftist infighting creeps to the surface, gets shut down very, very quickly. So learn that lesson. That's, I think, something that we should all understand maybe for the new year. Everyone's be like, oh, Mike, you're just saying this because you want people to stop attacking you. It's not even really true because we don't even really get much of it anymore, but I do see it a lot with other people, and it's just I'm just not going to participate in it. We're going to do our thing and we're just going to push forward, and that's what it's going to be.
Yeah, definitely. I mean, I'm the same, you know. I'm just going to concentrate on my own thing and my own community because it is the only way. I mean, you can't control the movement as a whole. That's you know,
you can't control other people. I mean, until you can, you can. There are some maybe people you can, but you generally you can't. And particularly someone who you've declared you declared your enemy, you've declared that you hate them and you hate everything, that you're never going to be able to control that person. And you've basically declared yourself someone totally unable to influence them at that point. So yeah.
So to get back to the censorship question, because we wanted to talk about Trump, and there's a very good way to segue from one topic to the other. Are there anything else you'd like to say about the censorship thing first?
I mean, there's not much other than I think that we're going to face struggle, and struggle will, it's depressing and it's blackpilling, but it's going to make people stronger. If there was a time, I'll also say this, there was a time, at least in America, when open, shall we say, Nazism, open, you know, virulent racism and things like this were not censored, when they were just ignored. There have been people online for almost as long as online has been around that have been promoting these kind of things, and even sometimes making money doing it, or a small amount of money. And they weren't shut down. It's only in the last few years when this has started, and that's because we finally started to make an impact.
Well, also, see, the way I would see this is that those people were never any kind of threat, because they marginalized themselves, basically.
Yes.
And whereas if you arrive at these ideas or similar ideas as a reasonable person, then you are much more of a threat, because you are going to attract other reasonable people, and you're going to be better at attracting larger numbers of people. And so obviously that's a bigger threat.
Yeah, like there's an old tradition of sort of like in America, there's kind of this tradition of, shall we say, conspiratorial thinking. I think Richard Hofstadter called it the paranoid style in American politics. And I understood what he was getting at. Now, I disagree with generally what he was saying, but I understood what he was getting at, where there is this streak of, shall we say, conspiratorial thinking in America. And look, conspiracy videos and things like that, and conspiracy theory websites and such, this, I consider this a form of American folk art almost. If you know what if that makes any sense, like it really is, like it's something that is, it has come out of America, and it comes from being in the sort of the heart of empire and feeling this massive, overwhelming presence over you that you can't really, you feel like you can't affect, and it's doing things you don't necessarily know what it is. It's secretive, so you come up with this stuff. So there is a sort of almost folk art tradition in America of conspiratorial thinking, and then figures like Alex Jones and sometimes more marginal figures. Art Bell, etc. And this has oftentimes had a crossover with the white nationalist movement. And so this has existed for a very long time. And they kind of knew about it, and they managed it how they did. But I think with the advent of what we call the alt-right, for lack of a better term, they started to see middle-class white guys from blue states raised by liberal families that were coming out with these views. And then they were like, oh crap, because now this has moved beyond the kinds of people we usually associate these kind of views with, which we don't take seriously and we don't let into the little club of people that are influential over society. And now we see, like, for example, when I was doxxed, they were like, wait, this guy, he came from this upper middle class white family, and he was he had this relatively high status job as a computer programmer, lived in a nice section of New York. How could this happen? And it's like, if that could happen, there could be more of them. And that's, I think, the thing they've had to deal with this, is that it's not just, these yokels, as they considered them out in the country, that think that there's chemtrails and UFOs being controlled. You know what I mean? So they've had to deal with the fact that this is not marginal anymore.
It's a much bigger range of people, and it includes people who they can't just dismiss or caricature as weirdos.
Mm-hmm. Which probably doesn't include me. I'm willing to admit that I might fall in the weirdo camp, and I'm okay with that. But increasingly, they will see that there are people that are coming out with these views. And, you know, I'll fully admit that when we came out and we started, we went full bore in ways that probably have stigmatized us, and we probably won't ever be able to fully escape that, and that's fine. But we'll have our audience, and we'll push our agenda. But there's people coming out, newer people that are going to have a totally clean image, that are going to be pushing these politics, and are going to be able to be, like, I've never wanted to be anything but a shock host. So there's no reason for me to really worry about that. But there's people that are going to be coming out that are really going to be pushing these agendas forward. And I think that that's great.
So, but I mean, and that sort of links with what we were saying earlier about the First Amendment being a hint. In a sense, it's a hindrance that you actually have to learn to overcome. So don't use the First Amendment to its fullest extent, and you will actually get further. But that, I want to emphasize, that is not to say, this is not some sort of wanky roundabout way of saying that I don't really believe in freedom of speech. And I'm somehow glad that we don't have the First Amendment in, yeah, in Britain or Germany or whatever, because I do wish we had the First Amendment, or that's something equivalent. I do. And certainly the issue now, as we were saying earlier, is the online space, because, you know, I mean, I'm far more worried about these corporations censoring me than any government, because they are more draconian. That's the irony. They're more and I said this to you once on private message a few months ago, that they are more these corporations are more draconian and strict than the hate speech laws in Britain, for example. This is madness.
Yeah, they can't really proceed against you, but they can silence you, which is like, that's almost worse. I mean, because in a way, as Alex McNabb has shown, when they start to try and drag you into proceedings, that you can use that to your own effect. You can use that for your own propaganda. But what really is the worst thing is to just be silenced and have everybody forget about you. And absolutely, I'm far more worried about corporations than I am about the government. I remember we had Jim Goad on our show a little while ago, and he started talking about the NSA. And I was sort of like, well, I don't like the NSA, but also, like, I have come to the conclusion, and I have internalized and basically lived with the fact that the NSA, while not actively reading every electronic communication I send, at least that unencrypted electronic communication, I know that it's in a computer someplace. I mean, they've told us this. Edward Snowden told us this, and they've essentially told us this. We get everything and we keep it someplace. And theoretically, they could go and retrieve it at some point. Who knows? But I'm not afraid of them in terms of my immediate goals. It's all of these companies that want to cut you off of now it's one thing to be banned from Twitter, which sucks. It's one thing to be banned from something like Facebook or something like that, or Patreon. But to the Patreon thing is the real blow, because then that's your ability to collect money. That's the real blow, is the ability to collect money. And of course, we had what we thought was a workaround in crypto, but now that is being crashed out. And you can call me conspiratorial, but I don't think it's unrelated. I don't think the crashing out of crypto is unrelated to the fact that they realized in 2017, towards the end of 2017, when it hit its peak about a year ago, when Bitcoin was at $20,000, that they had made, all of a sudden, all these guys that were using Bitcoin, that were, you know, all these figures online, these white nationalists, that they were millionaires on paper. You know, they were millionaires in theory. They could cash in their Bitcoin and be millionaires right now. And this, I think, is at least some, not maybe not all, but at least some of the motivation for the attacks on Bitcoin that we've seen, and the attacks on its price, and the refusal to allow things like exchange traded funds or whatever kinds of manipulations are going on with it. So I think crypto is something to be explored, but it's less hopeful than it was a year ago because of the problems that it's been, that, it, you know, the question is ultimately it needs to be adopted and used or it's worthless. And that's kind of a thing that there's been active interference with.
Yeah, you were heading towards talking about something and then you went into the crypto thing. You were saying that your ability to fund yourself, the ability to live off this work is the crucial thing. Now, some people will be saying, well, you don't need to live off this work. You can have a normal job and do this on the side. Now, first of all, people like Mike and me can't get a normal job at this point. But second, even if we could, that would mean much less time to work on this stuff, exactly, which would in turn have the cascade effect throughout the movement, really.
Yeah, and I would say, like, Look, everyone loves to hate on e-celebs and stuff. And believe me, I hate that term. I never wanted to be associated with that term. And that's not the point of any of this. And I really do think that, it's worth helping out the people that do it full time. It's not that many people, and it's not that much money. So, definitely help out, millennial woes and help out the TRS, if you will. therightstuff.biz/paywall. I'm not a proud man.
Well, so the other topic that we're heading towards was Trump, because obviously, yeah. Everyone hopes, and not everyone, but, nice people hope that he would Internet Bill of Rights, the SMACA thing, for example, and online digital, whatever, protecting online digital speech or whatever it was, these various things. Because, obviously, I'll just introduce this and then you can go. Alex Jones was instrumental, one of the biggest voices helping Donald Trump get elected, and there are other people. And, all over the place. I mean, Gavin McInnes as well. Not that I'm a huge fan. And Milo as well, actually, come to think of it. And all of that, and various other YouTubers. And, what has Donald Trump done to secure? I know that there's the wall as well, of course. I mean, we'll get to that, maybe. But the point is that if he had any sense, and if he were able to do this, it would be extremely sensible for him to implement some kind of Internet Bill of Rights. Because, I mean, this is going to, I think it's going to have a huge effect on his ability to get reelected in 2020. So, you take it away, Mike.
Yeah, I agree with you, because certainly the mainstream media is against him. And the mainstream of both parties were against him. And the thing with something like the SMACA or an Internet Bill of Rights is you do have to contend with the Congress. And the Congress, first of all, Democrats are going to have no part of it, because they don't need, all the big companies are already on their side. Right. Which is ironic, given the propaganda you hear about how things stack up with the Republican Party and the Democrat Party. The big business is on the side of the Democrat Party. OK, to the extent it takes sides, which until recently it didn't have to, or it just was either one. Doesn't matter. They get what they want. Let these two factions fight it out over whatever. Anyway, Democrats certainly are never going to worry about it. The only Republicans that would worry about it are those that feel like they need this internet movement of right-wing voices, whether ranging from what we do to somebody like Adam McGuinness, Stephen Molyneux, things like that, Milo, all of these people, that they need this sort of online right-wing presence, which goes way further and does more interesting content than Fox News and things like that. The youthful right wing, the online right wing, the people that are watching our content or Gavin, that kind of stuff, like that group of people, which forms this kind of ecosystem, as the left even came up with a name for it. They call it the Alternative Influence Network. You're on it. I'm on it. Sargon's on it. So they've actually researched us. They've looked into it, and they want to shut it down. And of course, anybody that's a Democrat is never going to work with it. And now the House is going to be in the hands of the Democrats. But Trump could have done some things with executive orders. He could have done some things with the FCC. The FCC has a certain mandate, and there's creative ways. Get some lawyers on this. Get some attorneys looking into this. Look at what the FCC's mandate already covers. Look at the FTC, the Federal Trade Commission. Look at companies that are colluding with one another, most certainly colluding with one another. Some people are like, well, Sargon or somebody should sue Patreon, PayPal, Stripe for anti-competitive practices or whatever, get discovery, learn what they're doing. So that's such a huge amount of effort and expense on him, and he'd be up against such a brick wall. But then you get the FTC. The FTC has a lot of power. It's a federal agency, and Trump is the president. He can tell the FTC what to do. He can tell the FCC what to do. This is where, I mean, he has to work around Congress, because Congress doesn't want to work for the people. They are working for their donors, and they're working for the big corporations. We got Trump in as like this Hail Mary pass to get this outsider in. But to get an entire Congress of outsiders in is quite a different proposition. And these people, even the Republicans, are basically impossible to work with the exception of maybe a few here and there who might be our guys. But generally speaking, they're impossible to work with. They don't want to work with Trump. They have donors breathing down their necks to not fund a wall, to not put any restrictions on Silicon Valley, to not try to stop internet censorship. Because they fundamentally, they don't like the fact that Alex Jones gets millions of viewers. They hate that. And I disagree with Alex Jones on a lot of stuff. But the fact that he was able to marshal millions of views and he was able to take this normally politically apathetic audience of conspiratards and tell them, go and vote for Trump. They hated that so much. And Trump has to understand.
Do you mean even Republicans hated that?
Oh, absolutely. Right. Even Republicans hated it. Absolutely. Like I've said, look, and I think we have to be putting it out there, the demographic situation, what that's going to mean for the electoral situation, etc. But I've long believed that if you could have it all mapped out and charted out, oh, here's the demographic situation. If you allow this much more immigration, if the percentage of whites sinks below this level, electoral propositions for the Republicans get pretty bleak, etc. You go into someone like Paul Ryan, even though I know he's retiring, he's kind of a representative of the GOP establishment. Go into his office and put up all the charts and show him, like, look, here's what we're going to have to do. You're going to have to drop all of this appealing to Hispanics. Stop pretending that you're ever going to get more than 5% of the black vote and directly appeal to whites and then appeal to those disenfranchised whites who have given up on voting. The people that listen to Alex Jones, right? Those kind of white people. That's what Trump did. And he won. And you go and you say that to the GOP establishment and they'll sit there and they'll nod. And they'll be, okay, very interesting presentation. Thank you very much. And then on your way out, like press an intercom on his desk and be like, all right, we got another one. Get him on the way out. You know, like they don't want to hear it. They know it's true. They already know it. They know what the demographic projects. They don't care. They thought their job was to slowly oversee the decline of America into a multiracial, polyglot, capitalist hellhole. That's what they thought their job was. That's what they still want to do. And they see Donald Trump as a bump on that road. And so getting these people to work with him is like pulling teeth or requires massive amounts of bullying or I don't know what it will take. But this is the problem we're up against. So Trump should be doing what he can be doing with his own pure executive power. And that's what I think he's doing with things like pulling everyone out of Syria. I think when he realized like, oh, they're never giving me the wall. Republicans and Democrats will collude together to prevent this from happening. I could be wrong. People don't like this theory because hating Trump is the new thing. I don't think that Trump was trying to fool us from the beginning. I think he genuinely wanted to do these things, but he just didn't know what he was up against. And then they were reacting to him. And then they kind of realized, oh, wait, this guy just sends out tweets. We can work around that. Like we don't really, you know, we can, there's always going to be the outrage machine, you know, the Politico and the Hill and Washington Post. They're always going to be the outrage machine reacting to Trump's tweets and feeding into their cat lady audience and whatnot. Sure. Feeding into their audience of, you know, short, bald, you know, redheaded men that have progressive values and things like that. And the cat ladies with no children with toxoplasmosis, like they can always feed that, right? That's a moneymaker for them. But, you know, generally speaking, the whole GOP establishment didn't really want to work with Trump either. So it's sort of like he's got to throw more Hail Mary passes and see what he can do. That's
so just
my opinion.
Just let him get on with tweeting, but prevent him from actually doing anything else.
I think they finally realized that that's all they had to do was just let the tweets go and ignore it and be like, who cares? And we'll just find ways to work around them, which they've done. I mean, look, 2 years with a Republican Congress and a Republican president, and we didn't get anything.
Yeah. You got the tax cuts.
I'm not going to totally counter signal it because tax cuts, sure, put some more money in people's pockets. I'm not against it. The government doesn't need your money. Like they'll just print money they want if they want to fund certain programs. But my thing is if a Republican Congress and a Republican president spend more than one day on a tax cut, that's a waste.
Yeah.
Right? Like you just pass it. Like you've got the Congress, you got the president, just pass it, whatever. Why spend months on this? No, pass a tax cut. Who cares? Now get on with the wall. It doesn't, and contrary to to what some people might believe, tax cut doesn't matter. There's no funding cuts that go along with it. The government prints money. It's fine. It really doesn't matter. Like, the government will just buy, the Federal Reserve will just buy government bonds if the government needs money, and then it'll have money. It doesn't need your taxes.
And the other thing is the criminal reform bill that was passed in the last,
Totally puzzling to me, because remember last year Trump was saying we should execute drug dealers, and now he's passing, and I was like, yes, we should. I actually think that if somebody is selling something like fentanyl, which leads to fatal overdoses, they should be killed, legally. I'm with due process, not in Minecraft. In the real world, they should be given the death penalty if you are selling people deadly poison that will kill them eventually. I mean, how many people overdose on fentanyl? The fentanyl overdoses in the last couple of years, I don't have the stats in front of me, but it has spiked, and it's a real problem. If you're selling that shit, if you're selling that stuff, I don't have a problem with you getting convicted and getting a death penalty for that. And that's what the way Trump was talking last year. Now he's talking criminal justice reform. I'm just wondering where this is even coming from.
Presumably his daughter and her husband.
Yeah, that's what people say, but I don't know. That theory is deeply unsatisfying to me. I find it to be, or the idea that it's like, daddy, I want a pony, and that actually matters.
I know, and then that's a narrative. But the thing, as you say, it doesn't even matter. I mean, who cares where it's coming from? It's coming from the people around him, one person or another, one body or another. And this is the result. He's overwhelmed. Yeah. He cannot do and what he wants to do, what he set out to do, what he promised to do. And as it has been said, he didn't drain the swamp. The swamp drained him.
I don't believe there's some people that are so mad at him. They're saying things like, oh, he was always a sham. I don't think so. I'm not that cynical. I think he wanted to do it. I think he genuinely wanted to do these things, and he just can't. They stumped him. They figured out how to work around him, how to undermine him. Also, the Mueller investigation, no one in Washington wants to get near this guy because, one, they think he's going to be impeached. Two, God knows whatever petty corruption you got involved in as somebody inside the Beltway. You don't want Mueller's gaze turned on you if you start backing Trump on anything. You know, there's just a whole number of reasons why he's got no allies. And so the question is, what can he do? And I actually think this sort of surprise announcement to remove troops from Syria, by the way, that's happening. Like, a lot of people were like, oh, that's not really it is happening. Like, there are troops that were in Syria 2 days ago that are today in Germany. Ironically, a country with more Islamic militants than Syria. But, it's true. They are pulling them out. And this is why General Mattis, just within the last couple hours before we went on air, has resigned. I think he was chairman of the Joint Chiefs or something like that. He's defense secretary. He stepped down because he's like, I was on board with the neocon agenda. I'm not on board with pulling troops out of any Middle Eastern country. You can't just do that. And now they're saying they're worried that he's going to just do it out of Afghanistan. And I'm thinking, this is Trump saying, like, all right, now I could be wrong. And if people want to say, oh, Mike, you're dumb, you're being played, like, you're too much faith in Trump, just you should be on board team Trump was always a shill. No, look, I'm taking a realistic attitude towards it. I think Trump wanted to do these things. I think he can't. I think he was totally stumped by the establishment. And I think the one thing he can kind of do is he's like, look, all right, you're not giving me anything. Well, I'm not giving. I'm going to take the one thing I can do on question, which is just pull troops out of all these areas. Because they're saying there might be an announcement on Afghanistan coming up, which I think that would be. I'm saying, Trump, just do it. Just do it, man. If it's true that you really wanted to do these things and you got stymied every which way, just pull the troops out, man. Just do it. Get them out of Afghanistan. And send these neocons and these neolibs and these globalists, send them all into a frenzy, and we'll all just enjoy them. Because at least there's that.
Yes.
Maybe we don't get the wall, but at least you now have put, and once they're out, the thing is, once those troops are out, getting them back in is a very difficult process for these people. That's why they don't like it. If you have a foothold, you can get more.
Yeah.
Once you take it and we're out, and the American people don't want it. Some dumb journalist on Twitter yesterday, some liberal journalist is saying, oh, I don't know anybody outside of like Trump's immediate circle that thinks this Syria pullout is a good idea. I was like, oh, yeah? Go outside of Route 495, which is the Beltway. Go outside of the Beltway into America. Talk to anybody and find somebody that doesn't think it's a fantastic idea.
Yeah, of course. No one's
95% of the country, all races and all groups of people don't want anything to do with this crap.
I mean, we could go into that, but let's just quickly see. It's been going on for, 15 years now in Afghanistan. How long in Iraq? Is it like 10?
It would be 18 years in Afghanistan because of 9/11. Iraq was 2000. 15 years in Iraq.
Right.
18 in Afghanistan.
Yeah. So, and we still, I mean, no one even, it, I mean, it hasn't worked out, has it? Let's put it that way. So
or it has.
Well, or it has.
I mean, that's the question. I mean, the thing is, like, you know, I don't want to go down the route of talking about foreign policy.
Yeah.
But I think it hasn't. It hasn't worked out for their stated goals, and it hasn't worked out for what their real goals are. And of course, now we're seeing that. So Max Boot, who's a well-known globalist journalist, was saying that he's saying all of the adults in the room we're against this Syria pullout. I'm like, oh, adults. That's a new word we're using here now. The adults, they were against it. and then he openly says, he basically, the mask slips and he's like, well, he never told Israel that he was going to do this. And now this leaves room in Syria for Russian and Iranian influence and only the Israelis there to deal with it. And I'm like, wow, sounds like something that is totally not my problem.
Yeah.
You know? Mm-hmm. So like, yeah.
Yeah, I understand. There are some super chats to get through. So let's go for that. But first, I wanted to ask you, if you had to bet on it, do you think Trump is going to win in 2020?
It's looking less and less likely. It would take a lot. I think there's a few things. It depends on his ability to keep his base motivated because the lack of winning in the first 2 years led to a malaise in which his base was not that motivated in the midterm elections, which allowed the Democrats to get the majority and then also to expand it through fraud and cheating and such, which of course the media and all these people assisted in. I think that Democrats have the problem is you have to also analyze the problems that the Democrats have, and they have their own problems, which is that they don't have a very strong candidate. There's an internal civil war within the Democrat Party between, shall we say, the old establishment and then the coalition of the ascendant, which is sort of like the younger people. People from these marginalized factions that the Democrat Party has mobilized, like homosexuals, transsexuals, Latinos, blacks. So they bring all these minority coalitions together, but those groups don't really have anything in common. And then they still want to keep the sort of half of the Democrat vote that is white liberal. And they got this stew of people that have these sort of competing identities and interests, and they're trying to keep them all together. And really, I mean, Ann Coulter said the one thing that unites them is the hatred of white men and the avatar for white men they see as Donald Trump. So that, I think, will be sufficient to keep them united, at least for an election against Donald Trump. But then I don't know, because I do see the cracks emerging in their coalition, particularly along lines of whiteness or not whiteness. So,
well, exactly. It's like the BLM thing when they suddenly decide, actually, we don't need you white activists anymore. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's going to happen in all sorts of spheres. We're going to see this everywhere.
Yeah, and I mean, that's something I think that, that's a place that those kind of things are where we're highly effective is in further exacerbating those kind of tensions in those groups.
I'll tell you what, this links to something that people have been asking me to talk about, this absolutely disgusting and awful story from, is it Morocco? I think it's Morocco.
Oh my God.
This Danish girl and a Norwegian girl went over there. And they've ended up getting beheaded.
I don't want to see that. I've heard there's a video, and I don't want to see that.
Yeah, someone sent me the video earlier.
I'm not going to watch that. I can't stomach it. I have a weak stomach, man. I can't see
it. Yeah, it's really
I don't like watching even phony gore. Like, yeah, I don't want to see that.
It's really horrendous. Let me just get this over with. The point was that one of those girls, someone's tracked down a Facebook thing or Twitter, where she's, you know, going with the refugees welcome thing, basically. Yes. Don't judge people by how they look. And then three years later, she's getting beheaded by, you know, Muslims in Morocco.
Yeah, and look,
it's horrendous.
If you had told me when I heard about this accident and I saw the pictures of the girls, both very beautiful blonde girls from Scandinavia, really. She was Swedish, one was Danish. Very beautiful blonde Aryan girls. When seeing them and hearing what happened, I knew what their social media would have looked like, right? I didn't need to see it for a confirmation. I would have known what it looked like. And this is where I think this is a huge problem, because these are women that are coming out of a high trust society, a very actually homogeneous, until recently, very high trust society, where they do feel they can trust everybody. They do feel everybody's a good person at heart. Why? Because you live in Denmark. Because you live in Sweden, you don't need to lock your doors. You can trust your neighbors. Everybody's like you. Everybody has your values. You don't mind paying half of your money in taxes for national health care. You don't mind riding your bicycle to work. You know, you're not worried that someone's going to be speeding around, hitting you. You expect people to obey the rules. You expect people to behave in high trust fashion, etc. The folly here. And I get it. They were, and some people want to blame them for their dumb liberal outlook. Like, I don't. I mean, first of all, women, whatever, right? Women. But then it's like, we are failing these people.
Yeah.
The society is failing them. They should be educated that, like, look, you can trust people like us. You can trust Danes. You can trust Swedes. You can trust Germans. You can trust Europeans. You can trust other whites. You can trust English, America.
Yeah, and Italian, this is something that I've made this point myself, that it's when you say that these people are idiots for trusting whatever, you're criticizing and sort of demonizing one of the core attributes of the European psyche, which is one of those things that makes us what we are, which is our trusting nature. And I think it's just horrendous that we're now in this situation where in our own countries and abroad, that attribute is used against us. It's disgusting. But the reason I mentioned this is not just out of the blue. It's because it links with what we were just saying, that, you know, these girls supported non-Europeans, were their allies, and then got betrayed by them in the most horrendous way possible. And, you know, I'm not saying it's going to be like that for every, you know, progressive
it's not really that for everyone,
it's the principle of the thing. You know, one way or another, you think you're relevant to them, you think you're needed by them, ultimately you're not going to be needed by them.
And this is not the first time this has happened. There's been a few stories like this over the last several years of people with similar attitudes going and getting murdered by these people. But I'll just say that ultimately those girls have that attitude because that's what they were taught. Women tend to be very socially conformist. And these are socially conformist women that come from a high trust society where the attitude they exhibited is what they were taught and what you are expected to display socially in those countries. That's where the change needs to happen, because you will forever continue to get white women that are like this and think like this and signal like this and then turn their signaling into behavior if they are not taught this is not safe to do.
Yeah.
Can have our society, our high trust white society in Scandinavia, in Europe, in America. This does not apply outside of the boundaries of those places. And there was a time when Europeans did teach that to their children, and these sorts of things didn't happen.
Yeah.
And that we have to relearn those lessons.
Yeah. And there was another photo quite famous from America, some political demo, a bunch of lefties. There were some white women there just sort of grinning away quite naively. There she is doing her bit for left-wing politics, and behind her there are two, I think, black women holding a sign, a placard saying something about white women, like how evil they are, basically. And it's like, this white woman's just there. She has no idea of the loathing for her of the people that she's with.
Right. Well, the Molly Tibbetts story, if you remember a few months ago, the white girl from Iowa, which is a very German part of German descended part of America, very white, it's like a little slice of rural Germany in America almost. You know, it's like the same kind of culture gets replicated. Like just like if you go to the upper Midwest, you see a little Scandinavia, you know, until recently, this is what it was like. People come and they have a common, generally common ancestry from that part of Europe, and they replicate the kind of social norms and the way of life. And so this white girl, they started bringing these illegal immigrant labor to work on farms in the area. And, you know, lo and behold, she trusts this guy. And then, but then there was a point at which, according to his own testimony, when he got a little bit too close, she said, "Stop it, I'm going to call the police." And that's when he killed her. And so it's like the realization kicked in, but by the time it did, it was too late. And so that's our job as men. And ultimately, and now we're men that don't have political power, we have to gain it, and we have to change how we educate girls so that these kinds of things don't happen, so they understand you can't trust these people. You cannot go to these places.
Certainly not in the way that you can trust your own people. It's a very different relationship.
Yes, you have to have a different relationship to other whites that you have to these people.
Yeah. So I didn't mean us to go into that so much. It was just making the point. And now I've forgotten what we were going to, because we're heading towards a fairly clean, tidy conclusion there.
Oh, yes.
And I've messed that up by bringing that subject up. So, yeah, we were talking about Trump's prospects in 2020. And then we were going to go to the Super Chat. Right, that was it. Okay. So I'll do the Super Chats now. And hold on a second. Someone's asking... Okay. I don't know about that photo with the placard. It was like a year or 2 years ago that I saw that. Okay. So someone's saying profit is and this is when we're talking about the social media corporations not being interested, not doing this censorship for profit, but for ideology reasons. And someone says profit is a means to an end, and that end is political. Yes, it can be. That's another side of it, that they can make themselves more wealthy and thus more powerful and thus interact on the political realm. And then someone gives $2 and says, "For Enoch Berg, gotta love him." And then another $2 from the same person and says, "Enoch Stein, handsome in Yule sweater." So there we are. And then someone else says, $2, "Create alt-right stuff and deny leftists access to it." That's it's kind of like creating a parallel society, something that we've been talking about in various episodes. Anna, someone asks, Serip asks, "What is your New Year's resolution, Mike? Do you have any?"
Well, I think I gave it before, which is my one is no infighting. Always focus my attacks outwards. Two is, I don't know. Continue lifting, I guess. I mean, I've been lifting, but I'll maybe lift more. And there's another one that will have to do with particular metrics I want to hit on the website, but I don't want to announce those publicly.
Okay. All right. And another person says, I've no idea what this means. See, maybe I shouldn't say it in case it's something really... I'll just say it. Unify, organize, train, and make white babies.
Okay, that sounds good to me. Yeah. Also, as another New Year's resolution, I think people should resolve to try to get involved in a local group, because they do exist.
Yeah.
And also, if people want jodelaray@gmail.com, send an email to that.
Right. Okay.
You just with general kinds of questions that you might have.
Okay. And someone else says $2 and says a few shekels for a great guest. So if we ever meet, I owe you $2, Mike.
No. This is all the money going to you. I'm just doing this for fun.
All right. Thank you. And then someone else says, I like when Mike asks for it. I think that was about donations at the point when we were asking for donations.
Oh, God.
Mm. There we are. And now a long time.
Shekels can be even dearer.
Oh, that was a wonderful voice. I remember that sort of 80s cartoon villain voice. It was so off the era. Shekels can be even dearer, friends. Especially when there are many of them.
Very...
And you can't tell whether it's an American or an English accent. It's kind of very much off an era. But anyway, and then now a longtime female fan of mine says, "Hello, gorgeous. You are doing great work. Don't clean up your room, bucko. It's so you. Love and kisses." Well, thank you for saying that, Angerad. But I have to say that though it might not look like it, I did actually spend quite a lot of time tidying up this room prior to Millennial. I spent 18 hours doing it.
Whoa, what was that room like before?
I know. It's actually become more messy since I've been doing Millennial. But anyway, I'm not going to make excuses. All right, and then another one. Mike, can you name the least paused country of each continent that you'd be willing to live in? There we go.
Okay, least paused country on each continent. Okay, North America. That's easy. It'd be the U.S. Even Canada's more paused, I'm sorry. South America, I would say Chile. Asia, I would probably have to say Russia. Africa, I don't know that it matters. Australia. Australia. There's only one country on that continent. And Europe is the last one.
Probably Denmark, I would have said, or Italy. Italy at this point.
Yeah, Italy, possibly. I don't know. Europe is a very contentious decision. That's really the only one. It's like the hardest one. Did I miss a continent?
I don't think so.
No, I don't think so. I'm pretty good at geography. So Europe is the only one that's contentious. Someone would say Poland, I would say. Some people might say
Hungary, for sure.
Hungary, yeah. Hungary is pretty based. I don't know. Europe is a very difficult one. That's because, again, that's the amazing thing about but this is the amazing thing about Western civilization, which is really, of course, as we know, European civilization, which is, you know, certain kind of people. The incredible diversity of it. I mean, there's more interesting stuff going on in Europe than like all the rest of the world combined. It's a fascinating place, fascinating and dynamic people that make things happen and are always interesting. Whereas I don't know that the rest of the world is not as interesting, shall we say?
Yeah.
I don't know, man, that would be a toss up. There's a number of good things are happening throughout Europe. An interesting thing I was looking at is that, the United States, I was looking at this survey on this website, which I don't have the link to it right now, but I'll put it up on Twitter, where he was looking at the ethnicities of whites in America and their general attitudes towards various issues. And despite the fact that we have this idea of Western Europe as being the most paused, this guy found that the more Western European, the more English and German people in the United States are in their descent, the more right wing they will be. And so that's sort of an interesting, of course, the Jewish element gets thrown in for some of the more Eastern European peoples, because it's not clear that that's differentiated and that could lead to a heavy left wing bias. But it's a very interesting thing that kind of looked at it. And the ultimate conclusion of the guy, which I agreed with, which was that, like, ultimately in the United States, whether you're Republican or Democrat, you can't use that as a total gauge, because white people are the most engaged in North America, in the United States, in the political process. So about 70% of voters are white, even if the population might be lower than that. So the political parties and the disagreements for free market capitalism, socialism, you know, how much should we regulate firearms? How much should we have the public health service, et cetera? Like those kind of disagreements in the range, those are intra-white disagreements, right? And so it's sort of like saying that, we find that the Polish people, for example, vote heavily Democrat. But they might not see that as a racial issue just yet. They're saying like, oh, we like these kind of sort of more leftist, shall we say, social policy in terms of economic things or like social welfare and things like that. There's no reason why Europeans wouldn't be in favor of those things. And so this is sort of an intra-European struggle. And even in the United States, the political disagreements reflect that. It's only now and more recently that this is becoming a blatantly racial thing, which is why I think you're going to see increasing racialization of the parties.
And I think that's the same certainly in Britain, for sure. Mm. And I'm sure other European countries as well. Basically, each of the traditional political parties is going to have to make a choice at this point. And one of them will probably support whites and the other will certainly not. And maybe both of them will not. I don't know. Have to hope.
That's the scary thing, is that neither of them right now will openly support white people.
Yeah.
The thing is that the Republicans in America have been happy to dog whistle and even go borderline open racism in their campaigning, which is something people in Europe might not realize. That depending on where you are in America, Republican candidates will go to lengths that you might not expect them to, but they won't do anything for you once in office. That's the thing that's so maddening. But they'll go straight up even white nationalist in their rhetoric, like very, very close to it. But
bloody
they won't
hell.
Do it once they're elected. Yeah.
That is surprising. I didn't know that.
Oh, yeah. No, you should see the way some Republicans campaign. It's, yeah. But it shows you that people respond to it. And they know that people respond to it. That's the thing that's so maddening. You haven't told. This is one thing I think a lot of alt-writers thought that when they looked at the demographics and when they looked at the projections, that they were telling the Republican Party something they haven't known. Like, they know.
Yeah.
They have known it. Although, if they didn't know it, they wouldn't be doing this stuff. But anyway, yeah.
All right. And then the final super chat, I think, is Mike. I laughed so hard at your Locke Boyce impersonations or Boyce impersonations this week. Thanks for the laughs.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. So, of course. Yeah. The Locke Boyce thing. That's another thing. I mean, the whole Alex and Locke thing. Check out our, if you don't mind me plugging, check out the TRS Radio YouTube channel. We do have one video up right now, but we decided that we're going to start posting, shall we say, SFW clips from TDS up there on a hopefully pretty regular basis, so people can share those around and enjoy them, and maybe they'll drum up some traffic for us.
All right. Okay, excellent. This has been a nice impromptu and surprise hangout. I wanted to get Mike on. It was difficult arranging it for various reasons, but we did manage to get it done in the end, so I'm very glad. This is the first time you've been on my channel. So
that is, and we got to keep in touch, and we'll do this more often. And that's a New Year's resolution. We'll do this more often in 2019.
Okay.
How's that?
Yes. All right.
So I just want to say Merry Christmas and Got Yule to everybody.
Okay. Thank you, Mike Enoch. So that was a really surprising development, but there it was, and I hope you all enjoyed it. So thank you, Mike, for appearing on Millennial 2018.
Mm-hmm. All right, thanks a lot.
Okay. I'll be back in about 10 minutes with Critical Condition. And I think that will be it for tonight because Blue Check Watch doesn't seem to have received the email, rather unfortunately. So I'll be back in 10 minutes, Critical Condition. See you then.
Okay.